Welcome to Hoosier Ag This Week, as the award-winning news team of Hoosier Ag Today brings you the top stories from this past week impacting our farmers and Indiana's most important industry, agriculture. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and coming up, the issue over water rights has been a hot topic during the Indiana General Assembly. Eric Pfeiffer chats with State Senator Susan Glick about her bill that would protect local water rights for Hoosiers. You'll also hear about a grain bin rescue that took place a week and a half ago in Shelby County. You'll hear from the Fountain Town Fire Chief and one of the volunteers on the scene who not only saved that farmer's life, but the firefighters just had grain bin rescue training in Seymour days before the incident. And our Gary Truitt is the host of a brand new podcast on the Hoosier Ag Today podcast network. It's called WTF, What's Threatening Farmers? We'll give you a preview of that podcast a little later on in the show. But first, just days after taking office, Governor Mike Braun detailed his proposed budget for the state of Indiana, and he's asking each of his cabinet secretaries to identify 5% savings on average across the board for each agency, and that includes the Indiana State Department of Agriculture.
We're going to make it happen to where farmers are blessed and not hurt by this.
And that's Indiana Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith, who also serves as the state's Secretary of Agriculture. Hoosier Ag Today spoke with Beckwith on Friday to see if he and his team have identified where those budget cuts within ISDA may come.
Well, within ISDA specifically, not yet. But we are in conversations with Director Lamb. He's doing a great job. But I think overall, I have looked into some other agencies that we have a hand in. And what we're finding is, on just sort of the generalization of most agencies, 5% is not hard to trim because there's a lot of waste. There's a lot of double jobs. There's been a lot of mismanagement of taxpayer funds. And I think we're going to be able to do that.
How does Beckwith respond to those who may feel that a 5% budget cut would have a negative impact on the services the agency provides to Indiana's farmers?
Well, it's certainly valid concerns, because right now farmers are really doing everything they can to hold the line. And I agree with that. And listen, I'm going to fight for everything that farmers need. I'm going to fight for more resources anywhere we can get it. This is not a willy-nilly cut. We're not going to just go in and swing the blade and see where the chips fall. It's going to be with wisdom. We're going to make sure that it's done strategically. And honestly, I think it will benefit farmers in the long run, because you'll have an agency that's more efficient and effective at helping with the needs of everyday Indiana farmers.
You can hear my full conversation with Indiana Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith. It's at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. Bird flu, biofuels, and the ag trade deficit were all brought up on Thursday during the Senate confirmation hearing for Brooke Rollins, President Trump's nominee for U.S. Ag Secretary.
And I commit to you today that if confirmed, I will do everything in my ability to make sure our farmers, ranchers, and rural communities thrive.
And that's Brooke Rollins in her opening statement Thursday to the Senate Ag Committee. She was asked about the U.S. ag trade deficit by Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado, and whether Trump's tariff policy was the right way to tackle it.
In the last handful of years, we've gone from not having a trade deficit in our agricultural communities to having a $45 billion trade deficit. Of course, that has led to many challenges, including food inflation. And so there are many tools in our toolkit, both through USDA and expanding markets, which are all intertwined, to begin immediately to work to bring that deficit down and hopefully soon get it to zero.
Ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee, Amy Klobuchar, asked Rollins about how she would manage the nation's bird flu outbreak.
If confirmed, how you ensure that farmers have the resources they need to combat the spread of this virus? What is your plan?
We are hyper-focused on finding the team right now. I'm sure they're already working. I have obviously respected the process and not gotten too involved. But I know that the current team and the future team will be working hand-in-hand to do everything we can on animal disease.
Klobuchar also asked Rollins about her family's investments in the oil industry and whether that would impact her decisions regarding policies to further grow the biofuels industry.
Senator, I can promise promise you this. Anyone that has ever worked with me will tell you, even to the detriment of organizations I have run, detriment financially to my potential family, that I have never, not ever made a decision based on financial interest ever. And that certainly will not begin now.
You can watch the full video of Rollins' Senate confirmation hearing and read more at HoosierAgToday.com. And a fourth case of bird flu has been identified so far this year in Indiana, this time on a commercial poultry farm near Fort Wayne. State health officials say the impacted farm is a commercial egg-laying production facility in Allen County with more than 26,000 birds. The previous three poultry farms impacted were all in Jay County, northeast of the Muncie area. You can read the full story at HoosierAgToday.com. It's time now for Hoosier Ag Today's Farm Market Review, and for that, we bring in Andy Eubank.
Thank you, C.J. Miller. It was a down session in the corn, soybean, and wheat markets on Friday. I'll have the settlements coming up. We begin, though, with market commentary from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. I spoke with him in the middle of the session. The markets traded mostly lower in the overnight and throughout the Friday session as well, led down by beans, and then wheat kind of caught up and became the weak side leader. But overall, we go into the weekend, Brian, with some losses after a very back-and-forth week.
Well, thanks for having me, Andy, and you summarized that well. It's been back-and-forth. It feels like a weather market, and the reason we're saying it feels like a weather market is it is a weather market. When we're looking at South America, specifically looking at Argentina, as we approach the last week of January here, to remind your listeners that while we're coming out of the deep freeze this week, temperature-wise, corn is pollinating as we speak in the parts of Argentina, not the entire crop, more so the later planted crop, not the very last planted crop, but Argentina kind of staggers their planting, so a good chunk of the corn is pollinating now under less than ideal conditions. Very warm temperatures. It's been quite dry here in the month of January. Having said all that, the drought that occurred 2 years ago was quite different. We had much, much drier conditions November, December, 2 years ago than this year. So subsoil moisture, deep subsoil moisture, I would say this year is better. But pollination is a sensitive time, as your listeners know, and whether you're in the Midwest or in Argentina, and it's just not ideal right now with 90-degree temperatures, a few hundreds sneaking in there, and very dry, and the corn market has responded, and it's approaching the highest levels. We have to go all the way back to Andy to Memorial Day in 2024, last spring, to see the March futures this high. So but we're seeing a little bit of uncertainty about the forecast. What I'd share there, Andy, is that there is some rain on the way next week for Argentina. And I'd remind your listeners that weather forecasts can be quite fickle either way.
Economist Brian Basting with Advanced Trading. Brian's number 309-664-2314. On the Hat Friday market review, lower in corn all day. March ended at 486.5, 3.25 down. May 2.75 down at 496.5. And July corn a 3.25 cent loss, 497.5. Beans almost a dime down. March 10.55 3/4, 9.75 lower, 9.5 down on the May, 10.68 1/4. July loses 9 cents at 10.79 1/2, and an even dime down for the March wheat, 5.44. May, 5.58 3/4, 9 cents lower. Strong in the meats, February live cattle, 204.77, a gain of 367, 17 cents up on February lean hogs, 82.30. You're up to date now on the markets, and much more is still to come here on the Weekend Show. I'm Andy Eubank. Who's your ag this week?
Attention farmers. A big part of the Keystone Cooperative Advantage is reinvesting in the business to better serve farmer members. To support this effort, they're partnering with Purple Wave Auction to sell over 150 pieces of quality equipment this January and February, including over 70 sprayers and spreaders with brands ranging from Case to John Deere and Rogator. And there's so much more selling in these auctions. Get registered today at purplewave.com.
Mostly dry weather on tap for the next 6 to 7 days, but then we get real interesting as we flip the calendar from January into February. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. Here's what's going on, in my opinion, as we move forward. Mother Nature can't decide whether she's coming or going, or she just wants to try and inflict as much pain on us as possible. But here's the setup as I see it for this weekend. Honestly, we're okay. High pressure still being analyzed a little bit farther off to our south and east. I think it's close enough that we feel the effects of this high pressure, meaning we see sunshine, blue sky for the most part, and no major problems. There is a weather system trying to come through the upper Midwest and Great Lakes today, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. So cloud cover offshoots from that may get down into northern Indiana, but I don't think it's a big deal. For tomorrow, Sunday, everybody is dry with partly sunny skies. Temperatures cool, but not cold, pretty close to seasonal for this time of year. And then we go into next week. Monday is going to be the same. Temperatures seasonal, but starting to push higher ever so slightly. Big surge of warmer air tries to come in from the southwest for Tuesday and Wednesday. It dominates southwest Indiana, has a tougher time getting over the rest of the state, but still, when you compare temperatures to where they were a week ago, we're not going to complain about the Tuesday-Wednesday push in temperatures at all. Getting into Thursday and Friday, significant warming is coming to finish the month. Huge, large, low-pressure area moving it through the southern plains and up into the central plains, western Corn Belt. Eventually, that will bring the leading edge of that frontal complex to Indiana. Friday afternoon, Friday evening, overnight into early Saturday, we have rain. Yep, rain coming through. Anywhere from a tenth to three quarters of an inch, coverage will end up being near 90% of the Hoosier State. I honestly think everybody can get something here. The rain is done before we get to sunrise on Saturday morning, and then temperatures start to fall through the day Saturday. This is February 1st. We flip the calendar. Temperatures on the way down. However, throughout Saturday, I don't see precipitation. I think we see clouds and sunshine. Nice little dry slot here. Then we get another round of moisture coming overnight Sunday night into Monday, and this is going to be in the cold sector. So as we're moving through the second and third, cold air is here. Precipitation comes. It's likely going to be snow. The low pressure track seems to be a little bit farther to the east, coming through eastern Tennessee, eastern Kentucky, and then into Ohio. That will likely be where the biggest precipitation outbreaks are, the biggest snows. But I think we see accumulating snow back over Indiana and up into Michigan. By the time we get to midday Tuesday, it's done. The cold air hangs out for another couple of days, and then, hey, look at that. Warm air's back, and it's back with a vengeance. Potentially more rain in here for late the 6th into the 7th. So, getting sloppy once the rain starts. I'm Ryan Martin.
MicroEssentials S10 from the Mosaic Company delivers uniform nutrient distribution. Every single granule contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. MicroEssentials has superior nutrient distribution when compared to MAP or DAP blends. This means your crop does not have to search for those nutrients, improving nutrient uptake. Choose a superior phosphorus fertilizer with MicroEssentials. Contact your local ag retailer to learn more.
It's too good to be kept a secret. The Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter. Every weekday morning, it gives you the latest news that's important to Indiana agriculture, plus a review of the farm markets and a customized weather forecast that's just for Indiana. It's free. It's in your email box every morning. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your employees to sign up for the Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm C.J. Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and the issue of Indiana's water rights has been made a policy priority for farm groups across the state following the LEAP project in Boone County. Eric Pfeiffer reports how Indiana Farm Bureau is showing its support for Senate Bill 28 that's been introduced by State Senator Susan Glick.
Much of the industry that's moving in, we've got some significant water users.
She points to battery factories and data centers as just a couple. For farmers, Glick says it's critical that we protect your ability to make sure the water turns on for your livestock or for your irrigation pivot. So SB 28 makes sure that companies can't just come in and use up all the water.
If in fact their development impairs the ability of those farmers or those ag operations to withdraw water for their uses, if it dries up a well, if it significantly impairs water in that aquifer, then that new operation must compensate And that means either delivering water to that operation in an emergency fashion or making permanent decisions in regard to replacement of that water so that those users who have been using that water for years still have the opportunity to continue their operations.
Now, that doesn't mean just handing you a check, but it does mean covering the costs associated with hooking you up to a new water supply or digging the groundwater well deeper. Read more of the bill details at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Well, if you're an Indiana farmer, you know just how difficult it is to make a profit. Andy Eubank joins us once again to report how that trend may unfortunately continue for many more years to come.
At the recent Purdue Top Farmer Conference, University of Illinois Professor of Agricultural and Consumer Economics Gary Schnittke said it will be difficult to build the case that corn and soybean prices will go higher over the longer term.
What we're probably looking at as the average, if we take the prices over the next 10 years, it will average something near 430 and soybeans something near 1040.
He focused on 10-year strategies for success in dealing with static commodity prices. Dr. Schnittke says there will be two primary areas where you may have to adjust.
One is the land area and what are you going to do about cash rents? And the second one is machinery, and we're going to have to, I think, reevaluate our machinery purchases.
He says the difficulty with cash rents is they need to come down, and come down considerably.
So how's a farm operator going to handle that? And I would also say that, you know, a strategy for building a farm in the future based on being aggressive in cash rent isn't going to work in the next 10 years like it did in the last 10 years.
Schnittke suggests a focus on machinery planning. Be sure the equipment is properly sized for your operation.
A lot of that does come down to the combine and making that combine cover as many acres as possible. If we're below, say, 2,000 acres, we're going to have to think about ways of sharing equipment, et cetera, so that we can keep those combined costs in line with where our economics are right now.
Tough times and tough decisions are ahead in the coming decade. I'm Andy Eubank.
Well, many times when you hear about a farmer who has been trapped inside of a grain bin, the outcome is often tragic. However, last Wednesday, the Fountain Town Fire Department in Shelby County was called to a farm to rescue a farmer trapped inside of a grain bin. And thankfully, this story not only has a very happy ending, it also involves a great deal of coincidence.
The timing of everything was really crazy, honestly, the fact that we'd just done this training.
And that's Claire Gray, public information officer and a volunteer with the Fountain Town Fire Department. She and her fellow firefighters had just completed grain bin rescue training in Seymour just days before the incident.
They talked about how people would get called during their class to go do a rescue, and I thought, wow, that's probably not going to happen. But another thing that helped with the timing was the fact that the farmer that was in the grain bin was practicing good technique, and they made sure that they had somebody out there with them to call 911 as soon as they realized they were trapped, which is something that is so important to emphasize to farmers getting in grain bins.
Dean Tyner is chief of the Fountain Town Fire Department. In addition to his team getting the training just days earlier, he says that a grain bin rescue tube had already been donated to his department by Bungie in Morristown to use for such an emergency.
We put up the grain bin rescue tube that we have on our truck, and we got it in to the bin and around the gentleman that was trapped. And shortly after we acquired the access to get him in and get everything around him, we used some other equipment from various other departments that showed up and were able to get him freed. The gentleman refused any medical treatment, didn't want to go to the hospital, and walked away from the incident, which is pretty spectacular.
Chief Tyner says both the training and having the grain bin rescue tube have been invaluable.
It's not the first one I've been on. We've had another one a few years ago, and it was the same situation, and the gentleman walked away from that one as well. So if I don't ever do another one, at least I've had two, and the outcome has been good.
He says he's proud of the efforts of his team and other nearby departments to save that farmer's life.
It's always nice to be able to save somebody, and especially when it's something like that, that you know the majority of the outcomes are never good. And when you can change that and make it a positive outcome, you're pretty proud of everybody.
Gray recommends that all Indiana fire departments put a plan into place to respond to grain bin entrapment calls.
At the very least, if you can't get your hands on the equipment or the training, at least come up with a plan to be able to get those resources in place once you get that call.
You can see photos from that grain bin rescue and read more at HoosierAgToday.com. And coming up, it's the same song, but a different dance when it comes to the types of schemes that animal activists have been cooking up. Gary Truitt reports how those schemes are becoming far more sophisticated as he gives us a preview of his new podcast called WTF, What's Threatening Farmers? Nice title, huh? That's coming up. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
Are there lessons that you've learned along the journey as you've gone through these cycles that would be helpful to those that are maybe going through this for the first time?
I just need to remind myself that something that I learned in the business experience, that the world is not static. And that seems fairly obvious, but when you're in the midst of some of these struggles, it's not that clear. And so things will change. Just like we learned with the pandemic, there's some innovation, there's some growth that can come out of these tough times. And it will in this situation again. And so it's a little bit like the age-old phrase that we know, necessity is the motherhood of invention and innovation.
Without a doubt.
Get more episodes online at agrinovusindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again for joining us here on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today as we introduce a brand new podcast this week as part of the Hoosier Ag Today podcast network. It's hosted by Gary Truitt and it's called WTF. What's Threatening Farmers? On the first episode of Gary's new podcast, he reports how animal activist groups have a new scam up their sleeves, and they're using new sophisticated ways to try and destroy the livestock industry.
Raising livestock has never been easy. There's checking those waterers when the temperature is minus zero. There's getting up in the middle of the night to check the fans in the hog barns or the heaters in the dairy barns, or just making sure there's enough feed out there in the fields. And then if you're a poultry producer, now you've got to stay up nights worrying about whether your biosecurity is good enough to keep the diseases away. Well, don't worry, folks. You won't have to be doing this very long because there are a whole group of people with lots of money and some very strange ideas that want to help you get out of the livestock business. Yes, I know, the animal activist movement has been around for a long time, but this is not your father's animal activists. These are nut jobs with a whole new set of tricks, a whole new agenda, and a bit of a different way of doing things. No longer are there just PETA weirdos taking off their clothes in public to protest fur, or guys going undercover and making videos and editing them and putting them on the internet to try to say that all livestock operations are terrible. This is a new group of people with lots of money and some very sophisticated tactics that you need to know about. Emily Ellis is with the Animal Ag Alliance.
Animal rights activism is nothing new, but the tactics and the trends used by these organizations continues to change and evolve from year to year. The main groups that we're following, they bring in over $800 million in income each year, so they have quite a bit of funding, most of which is being used to go for lobbying efforts, advocacy efforts, to push for a vegan, plant-based diet. They want to move away from animal agriculture.
Now, here's one of the new tactics they're using. They want to become your friend. They want to help you leave the industry of animal production.
Groups like Mercy for Animals, they have a project called the Transformation Project, where essentially they're trying to build relationships and inroads with farmers to transition them away from animal ag into either crop production or some other type of industry entirely. We've also seen U.S. Senator Cory Booker introduced a bill for the same thing to transition away from animal ag.
But wait, there's even more. These companies, as Alice indicated, have a lot of money, and they're using a lot of that money to buy stock in companies that produce food, that process food, that retail food. They're using this influence to force these companies to adopt anti-animal policies and procedures.
Two groups, HSUS and the Accountability Board, which is essentially an offshoot of HSUS, they have been very active in proposing shareholder proposals. Just this year, we've been made aware of 40 proposals from those two groups, which is about double what we saw in the previous year. Many of them are animal welfare focused, but there have been some that were environmentally focused as well. From the first half of the year, the proposals that we saw, there were 16 that were voted on related to animal welfare. They all failed. There wasn't a ton of traction behind them, but we did see some success on the environmental side where there have been one or two that have passed by these organizations, and they've noted that the proposals that are less prescriptive, so they don't detail how an organization has to meet certain policies or certain goals in the proposals, those are the ones that are more likely to pass. So we do expect to see some similar measures. But again, it's just another method of them trying to leverage whatever influence they can have over changing policies for farmers and ranchers.
Now, if you've been paying attention, which I'm sure you have, you might have noticed that there is a difference. There's a change in the messaging of these organizations. They're no longer talking about animal cruelty. They're not talking about animal abuse. They're not talking about animal rights per se. These groups are promoting a vegan lifestyle, not because they think a vegan lifestyle is great, but it reduces meat demand. They're investing and promoting plant-based or lab-based meat products because, again, that puts pressure, lessens the demand for animal agriculture. These groups will do anything and say anything to anybody as long as it results in less meat being consumed. Learn more on the latest tactics of the animal rights movement at the WTF Podcast, now available in the podcast network at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Gary Truitt.
And with that, it's time to turn out the lights on this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast version at HoosierAgToday.com. From our award-winning team of Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin, and our founder, Gary Truitt, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.